Good morning, everyone. I am so pleased to join again the second day of the Eco Yachting Sustainability Forum. Yesterday was already extremely exciting with great speakers and fantastic turnout of people from all over the world. So I'd like to start with once again congratulating the ladies from International Yachting Radio, Ria Rao, and also the lovely Andrea Taliaferro, who has taken it upon herself to come up with this idea and organize this online seminar, which obviously has touched something that is of great interest to our community, or people would not be taking their vacation time in August to participate in this seminar. And I'm really pleased to be able to participate myself. My name is Norma Treese. I am a member of the board of directors of the International Seakeepers Society, which is mainly what I'm here to talk about, although I represent many other organizations in the yacht world as well. I've spent over three decades working in yachting, starting out as a yacht chef, and have worked since then as a journalist and a business development expert. And along the way, I have always participated in various associations that impact yachting positively. And most recently, having joined the board of the International Seakeepers Society, that has made the opportunity to impact education and research on our oceans, working directly with yachts. Seakeepers Society was founded 26 years ago in Monaco. What we do is we place scientists on board yachts. In the last 26 years, we've done over 500 projects, working with more than 200 yachts, many hundreds of crew, and we have a level of support across the industry from owners down to builders, captains, and crew that is really powerful, and we're very excited and proud of what we do. So I'm also thrilled to participate in this seminar to discuss the subjects that are really important of marine conservation, and we're supposed to be addressing the various groups and associations that participate in these subjects, as well as the capability of crew and the yachts themselves to participate in ocean research. So before you spend the entire time listening to me, I would like to introduce our speakers. I'm going to start off with Brad Robertson. Brad, give us a wave. Brad's morning. A friend of mine. He's originally from Australia, but he's in Palma de Mallorca, and he runs a couple of really fantastic groups called Ondine and Save the Med. So I'm going to give you a chance to introduce yourself a little bit more at length, but let's talk about our other two speakers, and then we'll get into the meat of the subject. Greg Parrish, I just met today. He's coming to us from Victoria, BC, and he runs the Victoria International Marina and just told me that he's involved with Super Yachts Canada, and he works for an owner that's extremely eco-conscious. So Greg is going to have a lot of really exciting things to tell us about in a completely different geographical area than Brad and myself. So again, I think that's a real tribute to what the girls have organized with this seminar to have this caliber and diversity of speakers. Nicole Ebert, good morning, Nicole.
Good morning.
Nicole has just joined us here from the Ocean Legacy, and since you're replacing another person, I'm going to leave it up to you to introduce yourself. So with no further ado, Nicole, why don't you tell us about yourself and the Ocean Legacy and what you do?
Sure. So thank you so much for having me. My name is Nicole Ebert. I've been working with Ocean Legacy Foundation since 2021 I joined the team as part of the Clean Coast, Clean Waters Initiative, which is a lot of the stuff I'm going to be talking about was kind of brought forward from that funding stream, which came through the Ministry of Environment 3 or 4 years ago. And Ocean Legacy has an EPIC mission, EPIC standing for Education, Policy, Infrastructure, and Cleanups. And that's our four-pillar approach to combating the plastic pollution emergency response.
Now, wait a second, Nicole. I love that. You say that EPIC stands for, I want to write this down.
So it's Education,
Policy,
and Advocacy, Infrastructure, and Cleanups.
Advocacy, infrastructure, and cleanups. Okay,
yeah.
Great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so we are currently the only recycler of marine debris and fishing industry materials in Canada.
That's very surprising, considering the size of Canada and considering your vast coastlines and the amount of fishing that you do. Do you think that you are able to represent the vast amount of ocean front that you have? I'm very surprised to hear that, actually.
We are often inundated by materials and debris, but we have a very dedicated team of people who are both working, you know, hands on the in our recycling facility on the ocean and as well as in the innovation center to really come up to solutions for these hard to handle materials. And so, yeah, at this time we have our main facilities in Richmond, right at Stevenson Harbor, which is makes a lot of sense because that itself is a marine sector hub. And then we have ocean plastic depots sprinkled across the province, which are kind of staging areas where groups and cleanup advocates and industry members can bring materials to be processed that eventually make their way to Richmond. And last year, we actually started and expanded into Atlantic Coast. So we've created a pre-processing and sorting facility there with a bunch of different partners and cleanup groups. So it's definitely, we are in a great period of growth and evolution, and there's such a huge problem. And it's really, I know for myself, when I joined Ocean Legacy, I had no idea. I grew up in BC and I was used to seeing these beautiful pristine coastlines, and you go just a little bit further north or a little bit further west and you just hit these beaches where there's just so many, you know, just so much pollution and so much just horrible stuff out there that puts, you know, whales and the marine environment at risk. So it's been really incredible to see how much material we've moved off those beaches. And we have so many great partners that we work with. And but yeah, it's definitely one of the lesser known things about BC because it has such an amazing reputation for its incredible coastlines.
Oh, it does. I think so many of us are really big fans of that entire cruising area. And we're going to talk about that a little bit too. But I'd like to ask you, Nicole, do you do any of your gathering of materials on board vessels?
Yes, that's how Ocean Legacy started, was through vessel work. So we initially were working with an icebreaker. It wasn't commercialized. This was back when Ocean Legacy was really like a volunteer organization, you know, just a lot of people doing stuff because they saw that there was a problem and wanted to get out there and do something about it. And now we have a proper tug and we work with barge operators. We also have helicopter operations, and we've even done flood response and river cleanups as well. So we kind of have quite a different, depending on what kind of landscape we're working on, it could be a different approach. We also do lots of, you know, just drop in by foot. But vessels are definitely the primary way that we get around, especially in those hard to reach areas. Brooks Peninsula, for example, on the West Coast, you got to definitely get a vessel to get out there. Yeah, it's a big part. So it's, you know, and when we say vessels, you know, we have a large tug, but then we're mobilizing smaller boats. We don't have any yachts, so it's not quite as glamorous out there. But there are a lot of amazing organizations who are working closely with us and alongside us and as part of the Clean Coast Initiative who are also using vessels.
My goodness, Nicole, what a story you have to tell. And considering that you've been doing this for a relatively short amount of time, I'd say great congratulations to you. And one of the subjects that we're discussing today is collaboration. So I think it's very interesting that although someone like myself, who has been basically, you know, deeply entrenched in the yacht world and, you know, what surrounds us, to hear that there are other people involved in the same subjects and working in maritime in general, and it sounds like you've been extremely effective, Nicole. So that's great. And, you know, as part of this conversation, maybe we can figure out a way to bring you some more yachts to help you with your great ambitious things. But, you know, while we're talking about Canada and the fantastic things that you're doing up there in BC, I think this is a good segue for us to hear a little bit more about Greg Parrish from Victoria International Marina, who also represents Superyacht Canada. So, Greg, now that you know what your neighbor Nicole is doing, why don't you tell us a little bit about your activities at the Victoria International Marina, which, by the way, I'd love to visit sometime. I'm a huge fan of Victoria. So please tell us what you're doing. And I know that you have a very special emphasis on being eco-conscious there.
Yeah, thank you.
Your turn.
but we're on Vancouver Island, which is confusing. And yeah, we know the Ocean Legacy since our inception when we were building the marina in 2017. So we've been actually co-founded something with Chloe and Ocean Legacy, which is Future Oceans International, because we built the largest marina around for super yachts from the ground up. And we did it on contaminated land in a harbor that's been literally crapping on itself for hundreds of years. So when we cleaned up, we definitely noticed that life was coming back to the marina, which was unexpected. So we were, you know, we were designed and built by Craig Norris, our CEO, as an environmental scientist, but we were forced to be eco from the, you know, the beginning. Birds started coming back, animals were all around us, and we cleaned up an industrial site. So it was really cool to make that kind of our niche and our angle. So being the only super yacht complex on the West Coast of North America, we just harness what we are. And so when vessels come to us, we want to share what we have. And when people look over the side of the dock, they're impressed with what's there.
Well, surrounded by water as you are.
And what's going to happen as you go north? It gets wilder.
Sorry, you keep breaking up. I'm sorry. Awesome. I thought you were done.
No, I was going to say, it's just a really awesome opportunity to just use this complex and our influence to start a new narrative for yachting. You know, because you're coming to a new location, let's share the story. And so that's why we want to be as eco as possible. And we got just so many studies on the go. So if I'm cut off, if I lagged out, sorry.
That's no problem. I'm fascinated by your story. And as someone that's been involved in marina development, I helped build Marina Port Vale in Barcelona, which was also conceived to be ecologically friendly in as many ways as possible, including gray and black water evacuation and safe delivery of fuel and a variety of other things. So since you've been in the marina building business, and we all know that vessels do end up having to go tie up ashore, can you give us a little bit about, you know, the different aspects since your marina is brand new, basically brand new, about what you have done in terms of the marina itself and your environment to promote eco-consciousness?
There's a bit of a cut out there, Norma, so I missed a bit of that. So an example of what we do can you just repeat the question, actually?
What I said was, can you give us some examples from your newly built marina and your beautiful region of specific examples of eco-conscious aspects that you built into your facility?
Yeah, actually, no, we really haven't fully told the world yet that we're the only all-electric marina ever built. So we have 60,000 volts underneath us, so much power that was put into an intertidal marina that our local energy company, BC Hydro, we had to rewrite the code because they're like, you want to do what? So we're set up for the future. We don't have any fuel. So if all the fleets right now were to go electric, we can, you know, we could plug them in. So it's never been done before. So that set the bar really high. Of course, all the vessels are requiring fuel, and there's fuel docks and bunkering around us.
Well, you know, since we're also talking about organizations today, by the way, thank you for that.
We're actually starting a pilot project in the fall. We're going to be electric.
Greg,
I hope my...
We have a lot of delay, so I think before we try to talk to each other, we should always say, like, one, two... three. Can you hear me?
One, two, three. I can hear you.
Sounds great. I love the idea of hearing something new about the yacht world and the maritime world. And I think an all-electric marina is a story that needs to be told. So, you know, I work a lot as a journalist as well, Greg. So you and I need to speak separately about helping you spread the word about what you're doing up there. Now, we've already had Nicole and we've already had Greg tell us a little bit about what's going on in Canada. And I think it's really exciting and I can't wait to hear more. But since we are on both sides of the world and I'm kind of in the middle, I'd like to bring in the other side, which is the Mediterranean. So I'm here to introduce Brad Robertson from Ondine and Save the Med. And I will admit that I've been a big fan of Brad's and what he has done on his new home island he's from a much larger island, which is Australia. But Greg, as I've just said, being a fan of the amount of volunteer work that you have done and the efforts that you have put in, can you tell us a little bit about Save the Med and Ondine?
Yeah, sure. Thank you very much, Norma, for a lovely introduction. My name is Brad Robertson. I am a salty old scuba diver, which is what brought me into yachting in the beginning. When I arrived to Mallorca, I started a diving business and taught a lot of kids that had parents in yachting in the summer. Also worked as a private dive instructor on board yachts here in the Balearics, and was lucky enough to be flown all the way all around the world to look after mainly families. I've taught yacht crew how to scuba dive. I've taught yacht crew how to lifeguard. So maybe there should be another organization called Save the Boss as well as Save the Med. So,
in light of what we've just had happen in the last couple of weeks, I'm not sure if that's appropriate.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It didn't even come to mind. Yeah, comment made, foot in mouth already. Fantastic. But no, my introduction to yachting was very pleasant. It was from the peripheries. And through that business work that I was doing when I first started here, I started Ondine. Norma, you'll be very sad to hear that Ondine doesn't exist anymore.
No.
It evolved into Save the Med, and I closed my business and to focus 100% on this. And this was a decision I made probably about 8 years ago. And the two key people that helped me decide to chase my heart or chase money were my two children. So, yeah, bank account's not as comfortable as it used to be, but the heart's much fuller. So now I run Save the Med. I'm the president and co-founder of Save the Med Foundation based here in Mallorca. Our vision is really simple, a healthy Mediterranean basin. Our mission is a regeneration within the Mediterranean basin through a holistic and integrative approach, contributing to the re-evolution of local communities into aware and active custodians. So this is the result of 13 years, Norma. One of our biggest successes here in Mallorca is contributing to the marine protected area of Sa Dragonetta. And that was one of the first projects we started back in 2011, which is quite a mean feat for an organisation that had no budget, no structure and no sign of any income. And then over time, we added plastics into our target. So it evolved from marine protected areas and plastics. We've just finished our first official strategy, which will be very exciting to share with the yachting community, because one of the pillars in this strategy, Norma, is collaboration. And it's something that I've produced much more than you think could be produced when people are genuinely working together and organisations are working together, but taking the time. One of the things that I've learned, and I do see this in yachting because it's quite a small industry and the communities that are there, there's a lot of respect between individuals, there's a lot of trust, and I think having this trust and respect at the forefront of these collaborative approaches, you can really move mountains. So we, like I said, we work on MPAs, we help design them, we help implement them. We also have education programs on plastics. Another sort of pioneering aspect of Save the Med is our HAPI project, and that's HAPI, stands for Honest Alternates to Plastics Index. Now, it was probably about 9 years ago, I was thinking, how can we give people a alternate to single-use plastics? There was a lot of organisations putting out lists of alternates, and, you know, the market changes so quickly. It's also very hard to decipher whether people are telling the truth about a product or not. So instead of putting a list together that we thought was a sensible list of alternates, we designed over a period of 8 years an index. And what this index does is allows the consumer, whether that's an individual, a business, maybe a marina, a yacht, a company, to assess their single-use plastic usage, look for alternates. And maybe you have four alternates, for example, one problem product. You put the same data set into the index from the problem product. It spits out a number from 0 to 10, 0 being the least amount of impact, 10 being the most amount of impact, and you can do that for all the others. So this is why we call them honest alternates. It keeps people honest, which in a competitive market is not always the case. So I like to refer to this as an anti-greenwashing calculator, which really puts the power of choice back into the consumer's hands.
Well, I think that's very interesting, Brad, because even though all of us here, and I think all of our listeners, are definitely interested in and want to contribute to conservation in any way that we can. But when you drill down into statistics, I think that is an approach that works with an awful lot of people because, as you said, greenwashing is something that we are all of us faced with. I had someone when I announced that I was participating in this seminar said to me, I'd be happy to watch as long as you promise me that you don't use that nasty S word. It was sustainability because he felt that it was overused, which I thought was interesting. But Brad, you used some words in our introduction, which I really liked. And I want to make sure that we can all emphasize something that I'm sure that we all share, which is passion, love, and determination. I think that's what it really takes in order to, you know, make these really ambitious actions resonate not only with all of us who are thinking, you know, along the same way, singing from the same hymnal, we're all able with passion, love, and determination to spread our word in better ways. Now, with Sea Keepers Society, as I told you from the beginning, we do a lot of different types of activities. We do most of our activities on board yachts. That's where we've done our over 500 missions. We work together with a unbelievable array of incredibly accomplished associations, including, Brad, last year, you probably remember, we sent a couple of our representatives out to Palma and did one of what I call our base activities. We participate in Seabed 2030 project, which is doing the bathymetric data collection on board ships all over the world. We're actually the largest group contributing to that international effort. We are a trusted node. We do a lot of education for children. We have educated over 2,000 children just in the last couple of years, which I think is pretty incredible. And another one of our baseline operations is something that I think probably all of us here on this panel are involved with, and that is beach cleanups. There's something that is tremendously inspiring about something that's so simple. And as I said, Sea Keepers sent a couple of people to Mallorca last year, and we participated in kind of an island-wide beach cleanup where our responsibility as sea keepers was to bring in as many yacht crew to participate. And I think that was a big success. But since Brad was talking about statistics and helping people understand what you do and what they do through statistics, I just gathered these today. So I thought you might be interested to know that in the last year, Sea Keepers, excuse me, not in the last year, the last 5 years, has organized 193 beach cleanups, which have gathered over 6,400 volunteers. We've collected over 1,200 extra large size bags of trash, and that has accumulated to over 26,000 pounds of material. And that is, our, as I said, our kind of base level community involvement activity, something that we find tremendously inspirational for yacht crew to participate in. And we organize these all over the world for yacht crew to participate in. And as I said, Brad, I remember when I met you, that was something that was brand new, doing beach cleanup. So can you tell us a little bit about the history of, you know, literally hands-on cleanup and what that does for your groups and your people on your island?
Yeah, Norma, the beach cleans are a little bit of a distant memory these days. We do have our Dos Manos program, which we run in the schools, Two Hands, and that has a beach cleaning element to it. When we did start 13 years ago, Norma, it was the yachting industry that kick-started this organization. There was people like Janusz from Roma, MY Muddy at Roma, and a few other people that were really key people. I mean, Fiona Bruce from Doyle Sales, she's still on the board of directors, and a few other yachting big names. But it was what amazed me back in the day, and we'd do a beach clean and maybe get 100 people turn up, was the absolute joy and elation on these people's faces. And I'm like, wow, how do they get so happy picking up other people's stuff, other people's rubbish, you know? And this whole thing was really the beginning of understanding how important communities are and how important that actions like the beach cleans are to raise awareness and get people thinking about things. Because when people see it from the outside, they might hear it on the radio or see it on the telly or online, it doesn't give that substance. And when they're there and they're picking up what they think is a lollipop stick, but it's actually a cotton bud stick that somebody's cleaned their ear and thrown into the toilet, and it's gone down through all the tubes and out into the sea. That story really hits. So the beach cleans, I do miss them. But again, we were really pioneers here in Mallorca when it comes to plastics. And then other organisations grew and they started to do similar things. And I think with the issues that we have, climate change being the umbrella issue and everything else falling underneath it, for me to continue doing the same thing when others were doing it already didn't make a lot of sense. There was value to add in other areas of the field. So now we concentrate more on the plastics in an upstream sense in regards to trying to stop the plastic from getting there in the first place. The end of the day as well, and what's really important for all of the work that we do at Save the Med is not to put the blame on the consumer, because we all of us have enough stress and enough responsibility on a day-to-day. We don't need to be blamed for a problem that's actually caused by large corporations and governments not performing properly. And if governments and corporations didn't produce this material in the first place, we wouldn't have the issue. From my understanding, Norma, the term carbon footprint actually came from the oil companies to throw it back on the individual.
Well, you know, there's so many issues that are involved, and we all know that it's extremely controversial to discuss climate change. There are still people that don't believe in it, but, you know, what I'm focused on are practical applications of what we can all do as individuals, and personally what we can do as part of the yachting industry to have a more, you know, educational overview of what we can contribute and how we can pass the message along. And obviously, Brad, you're a pioneer. You started in this really early. And I think it's fantastic that you've been able to grow your association. As I said, at Seakeepers, we consider beach cleanups and education of youth as kind of foundational columns of what we do. And then that leads on to the higher level activities that we're able to do on board yachts, putting scientists on board yachts, bringing scientists to sensitive areas where they can contribute their knowledge and gather research and so on. So I think it's really amazing and a real tribute that you've been able to move on and do even more important things. But I'd like to know from Greg and also Nicole, from a dos manos point of view, I love that expression, by the way, Brad, can any of you make any comments about any hands-on direct participation events that you participate in? Brad, did you have one more thing?
All I wanted to say was I just wanted to clarify or not correct, but raise a point about what you just said about Save the Med going on to more important things. And I don't think we're doing more important things. I think we're doing other things that contribute to and complement things like beach cleans. I think they're all as equally as important. And I just wanted to clarify that because I didn't sit totally comfortably with that one.
No, obviously, I agree with you, Brad. And I don't mean to say that, you know, what you started out as your base and what you were able to explain to so many people as being important, that what you're doing now is more or less important. That was a foundational pillar for you.
Absolutely.
And you've really done a fantastic job of getting the point across. So, Greg, at your facility, do you do dos manos, hands-on type of activities with your guests?
Yeah. When you build the biggest marina around in a city, the tide goes in, tide goes out, and we see the debris that sticks in our fingers. So we daily pick up all the large debris and everything that we can. And being in British Columbia, like Nicole can attest to this, that we have a lot of biomass. So you'll see stuff like lots of styrofoam, stuff that you can't pick up the big stuff. We remove it and then we do our best. And then the real experts, and you cannot contest what Ocean Legacy does, like they're the OG on our coast. So we even founded a foundation with them called Future Oceans International. So the big stuff we can pick up, you know, it's a big issue, but we really got concerned about clothing and the microfibers that go through the wash cycle that we can't touch. So we're working with the University of Victoria to develop a system to detect microplastics in the water. And then they want to eat it with enzymes. I'm not sure how that really works, but they're scientists. So really we just pick up what we can see. And then we encourage our clients as they go up the coast to pick up whatever they can. And actually, we need to talk to Ocean Legacy about your depots up the coast, because three otters yesterday actually said on the way down, they could pick stuff up and tow it and or put it on their deck. So again, collaborations. We got the right mix, you know. I got the toys to play with, and we can influence our clients to get into it. And they really do. Like, they love, now that once you pay attention to debris, you seek it out on the beach.
Well, as Brad said, it's amazing how
it's like you can't stop looking for it. And it's kind of interesting how people behave.
I'm sorry, Greg. We have to continue to have the, maybe we need to do like a cutoff thing. You know, now you know when you're done, right? But, you know, Brad mentioned how inspiring it is for people and the reaction they have to doing something so simple. Yeah. And I can't help but go back to what you said at the beginning, Greg, and I'm so personally inspired by an all-electric marina. And I have to say, I'm sorry I didn't know more about it before, but I can't wait to come up and visit. I mean, that sounds so forward-thinking, and yeah. I hope we see more of that in the future. And the fact that you are able to actually expand inspiration and encourage your guests to participate in those types of activities further afield from your own facility is really a wonderful thing. And I applaud you for doing that. And as I said, I can't wait to have a chance to go up and see that. Now, you mentioned working together with Ocean Legacy. And Nicole, when I was reading through your biography and a little bit more about Ocean Legacy, I was very interested that you go kind of across the gamut. You start at the beginning of gathering plastics and detritus from our oceans and coastal regions. And then tell me, you take it all the way through the end of the process. What do you do with everything you collect?
Right. So everything that gets collected either by Ocean Legacy or other groups, like another notable one that I can mention is like the Small Ship Tourism Operators Association. We work with Rugged Coast Research Society. We're involved with Surf Rider, which has an international and local chapter. There's so many great groups out there doing this kind of work. And so we receive materials from other cleanup groups at our depots, as well as cleanup materials ourselves. And so everything comes back to our facility in Stevenson Harbor, which we have named the Plastic Pollution Emergency Response Facility. And from there, we work.
And what's the acronym for that?
It's PERF, P-E-R-F.
I have so many. I have a whole plate full of new acronyms today.
Yeah, and it's so that's like based in Stevenson Harbor. We just moved there two years ago, right shortly after I started. And so we work with third-party recyclers from our Stevenson location. So materials that we don't recycle in-house, like styrofoam, tires, things like that, we will send off to third-party recyclers. When you said the S word earlier, I assumed you were talking about styrofoam, not sustainability, but that's a pretty bad one. And then, you know, the materials that we can recycle, we process in-house. So for us, that means that we're sorting things. We do a lot of sorting in the field. That's a lot, some of the work that we do is really training these groups and like, how do you properly categorize, identify and sort materials? So when we're out in the field, we're using different like large super sacks to isolate materials. And so we have everything, you know, we'll isolate buoys and floats. We don't process floats in-house, but we do try to upcycle a lot of material. We also work with artists who often come in and we'll try to grab things. If film designers will come in and try to get materials from us. So then we'll separate things like ropes and netting, different materials, different types of hard plastics. So just hard plastic fragments, which is something you find a lot of as well. So once we've got our materials isolated, we run it through a processing and downsizing, which involves different wash lines. It's very heavy industrial. So it's like different wash lines, different shredders, different things that take things down to a smaller granulate. And from there, we can actually melt it. And so it goes through an extruding process where it's melted and turned into a recycled plastic pellet. So we've been working with different businesses to get this post-consumer recycled pellet back into the market to really explore how to close the circular, like to create a closed loop in terms of the circular economy. So finding solutions is hard to manage material that didn't have what we call end of life recycling options. And right now we have our materials being incorporated into it, like a lot of different types of products. So it's actually, we call it legacy plastic. So if you look online on our website, Legacy Plastic, you can see the different types of material. There's a really beautiful color that comes out when you mix all these different types of ropes, which we call ocean green. And then you have everything from like black to orange. We've also been working with a company in Alberta to actually create lumber. So we've designed benches and outdoor furniture. We're working with some of the regional districts to build compost bins that are going to be put out into the community for people to use for their compost, planters. It's really incredible to see the way that you can actually reintegrate these materials back into new materials. And really, of course, we're looking, when we're working with partners, we're looking for materials that are durable, that have a long lifetime, that are not single use. Speaking of clothing, we worked with Anyan last year to create, they created a button out of oyster baskets collected near Denman Island. So they've got a shirt called the Denman Island Collection now, which features our buttons. So people are really, it takes a lot of work to integrate a new material into a manufacturing process, which has been a bit of an obstacle for our plastic sales. But once people really commit to exploring that, you know, the sky's the limit. And it's really wonderful to see these products come back to us. It just like the staff, you know, and just seeing the staff at the office going like, oh, wow, this was a buoy. And now this is really incredible. So that's a little bit of the kind of the full cycle. And then we also are developing a lab. So what we're really trying to also do is decentralize access for people who want to incorporate materials but have questions or don't have the resources to be able to test their materials or our materials or how they interact with other stuff that they're using. So this is, we've now also innovated a lab within our facility.
Right on.
My goodness, Nicole,
yes.
That was all so very interesting. And what I am taking away from this discussion with all of you guys, and by the way, what a fantastic panel. This is really interesting. I love the geographical diversity. The other thing I really like is that we have been discussing solutions for inspiring people. And we've been talking about activities that are kind of micro beach cleanups and, you know, taking things. And then all the way to what Nicole was just describing, and that is about as macro as it gets. You have your own manufacturing facility. You are working with end products to go to other users to give them a completely new, different life. I mean, that is taking that circle and really making it complete. And I find this discussion so interesting because of that. Now, one of the things that, you know, I'm a yachtie. Yacht crew is my specialty. And one thing that we find as sea keepers, and I've always found as a representative and advocate for yacht crew, is that they thrive on inspiration. They thrive on the positivity of being able to do something, to use their jobs and their vessels and their careers to influence the health of Mother Oceans. And I think all three of you have mentioned some of those things, but are there any specific recent activities that you've participated in that you think are particularly good examples of bringing your theory together with your people? Greg, I guess where you are on Vancouver Island in your marina, given the ethos you have of eco-consciousness, you might have a couple of great stories. Besides, I love sending your yachts afar and them coming back with trash that you can give to Nicole. Mm-hmm. What else have you done that you feel inspires your guests and your crew?
We do a lot of like ecological studies just because of the curiosity of what's happening. But what's most exciting is our work with local University of Victoria. So actually, Chloe Dubuy from Ocean Legacy, she's going to Antarctica in 2025 with Sylvia Earle, and she needs to do a deep water column sampler. So we hooked her up with Roper Industries, which is working with us through water column sampling. and they're going to send down two systems for her to do some deep water sampling for microplastics. And then the other division of UVic has come up with that handheld device that can actually show you what microplastics are in your water within 5 minutes with no laboratory. It'll take your, they use peptides that'll connect to a certain type of plastics, that'll coordinate it and show you what you have. So those are just really cool things that are coming out of our local university. And I'm not sure, I don't know if you know, but we work with some rivers. So we've done a lot of seakeeper stuff in the past. Mm-hmm. We did a humpback vocal whale study. But again, it's back to just using our facility and our influence, because everyone wants to be in this sexy world of yachting. So let's use that and let's bring people in. And then me being the networker, let's try and figure out who they need to meet to do really cool things. So every day there's something cool coming up and it's just exciting. And I often get accused of being in the weeds and it doesn't make sense, but then it will make sense later. And in the end, our clients love it. You know, they're here for a reason. So, but back to your question, the most recent things are, yeah, working with the university to get down to hardcore science and give the tools to people like Ocean Legacy to do the work they need.
I think that's great. I am truly amazed and inspired by listening to all of your stories. Brad, you have so many of them. Tell us a little bit about what Save the Med is doing, working directly with people and offering the kind of inspiration I know you do.
Wow, what a question. How long have we got left, Norma? Yeah, no. So one of the things that I need to, is one of the reasons I would love to come back into the industry as a representative from Save the Med and talk to the local community, the local yachting community about the marine stewardship. And marine stewardship is a relatively new science. People might know it as similar model as custody or land-based custody, where landowners would work together to save certain species. It would maybe be two or three landowners, one target species, local government, and they all work together to bring that species back from potential extinction. Lots of great examples of this on land all around the world. But when you look at the stakeholders involved in that scenario, there's the landowners, the government, and the NGO. When you look at the sea and the stakeholders involved in the usage of the sea, and nobody owns the sea as such, so we're all using the same parts of it, it means that the number of stakeholders is almost limitless. So we've been rolling out a stewardship program in Andratch, the local council area in front of Dragonetta, the marine protected area that we helped design and implement. And it's all about, this goes back to our mission and having local communities become active and aware custodians, is to bring this sense of not ownership in the way that we think about ownership today, but ownership in the natural environment, that we are actually part of it. And the same way that we care for ourselves, we want to care for the environment that we're in. And we've been running a program out of Andratch, probably the last 2.5 out of Poyenta. And the yachting industry is a key local community in this. Things like buoys, the management of buoys. The yachts are always calling out for better fields of buoys where they don't have to drop their anchors. The Mediterranean, the hottest word in the Mediterranean at the moment is Posidonia. We don't have any direct projects related to Posidonia. There are plenty of people out there working on it. But one of the really amazing and inspiring stories is in St. Elm. And for the yachties that know the southeast corner or the southwest corner of Mallorca, where around Andretz, they'll know St. Elm. Some beautiful restaurants, beautiful beach, and a little field of just this array of different types of buoys for small boats. And since our work has started there, we've managed to work with local families that have taken the lead in managing this field of buoys, and it's starting to become official. So getting local community to, one, identify what the issues are for them, and this is also something I learned over the years, Norma, is you don't assume what a local community has at the top of their list of things that are important to them. So we don't go into these areas flying our flags and saying, hey, look how good Save the Med is. We work very much like mycelium. We're very much underground. We're supporting what needs to be supported. We're joining dots. Greg, networker, I would use the word weaver in my field, and weaving all this together. So, yeah, local communities are right at the forefront of everything that we're doing, and which is a little bit contradictory to the name that we hold, Save the Med. It's not Save St. Elm or Save Mallorca. It is actually the entire Med. So to fulfil that name, included in our strategy is how we work with other organisations around the Mediterranean by working on local issues with local people in local ways. Because the Mediterranean has 21 different countries, different languages, different ways of thinking, different levels of corruption, all these different, and you can't blanket this with one solution. It needs to be done locally. And I really think that the yachting industry can help massively here in the Balearic Islands, the yachts that come here, the business owners that are here, but also the yachts that are visiting other locations. This is a network between people doing good things that I think we should all really get behind. I'd love to see the yachting industry as a whole step up a little bit more into this field. The resources are there, the abilities are there. I know the restrictions. I know a little bit of the details. But I think if we can band together, Nicole, Greg, yourself, Norma, myself, there's more out there, and really start rattling some trees or shaking some trees, rattling some cages, very respectfully, very politely, with a smile on your face, I think we can get a lot more done.
But I agree. You know, so maybe we should be hoisting our sails together in order to start a course towards greater stewardship for our oceans. And in all honesty, I say that with a smile on my face, but I think that with the kind of people that we have on this panel, not to mention the support of organizations like International Yachting Radio, with what Andrea and her people are doing, with all of the amazing speakers that they have had for the last 2 days, with the interest and participation of the public, I think that we are getting somewhere and making things happen, Brad. And I hope you feel that too. And definitely the example that you mentioned about Posidonia grass, I'm sure that both Greg and Nicole are aware of that. That is the number one ecological Mediterranean Sea hot topic, which is that if yachts drop their anchors on Posidonia grass, that means that there's less grass, which means that there's less area for other plants to grow and fish to hide and everything else. And so as a result, across the Med, the growth of large and small buoy moorings has been phenomenal. And that has taken a relatively short amount of time. And I'd like to say that yachting has been a leader in that, but I'd say maybe we've been more of a contributor. But we've definitely been benefactors, because I think we all feel better when we know that we can safely moor our yacht in a beautiful area of clear water and not do any damage to the ocean bottoms. And I think you would agree with that.
And anyone listening, I'd love to talk to you, Brad, about that, because we need to manage our traffic in our waters. Once you leave our marina, the infrastructure gets less and less. So where they're dropping anchor, like, we need to educate them, like, don't do it here. There's a nursery of rockfish here. We really have a big interest in trying to get more invoice.
Man, I've been waiting for an excuse to come to BC for decades.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. So talking about collaboration, I think just within our own panel and the four of us here, we have established the fact that obviously we all have things in common. We all of us share Brad's passion, love, and dedication. I'm definitely going to be keeping those three words together, Brad. Thank you for that. And I think that we've made great strides. I think it starts with a philosophical point of view, then it goes on to small actions, and it goes on to greater actions. And I think you all here are great examples of making these things happen. Now, I just want to mention, we have a few people that have come in. We haven't had a lot of questions, but we've had some links to some groups that sound very interesting. And I have to get a little closer here because I'm not able. So Nicole, you sent in a Legacy Plastics. I guess that's part of your Ocean Legacy organization.
Yeah, that's our plastic.
That part of it, I thought the manufacturing was pretty amazing. I mean, honestly, you have taken actions by people and turned them into an entire industry. And I think there's a lot of people that can learn a lot of lessons from that. So I personally can't wait to learn a little bit more by looking at Legacy Plastics. We also have Vancouver Island North.
So it's Take the Pledge. It's the Live the Wild Pledge that you were asking for examples of how we've kind of had initiatives where we're doing cleanups and getting people out with their hands. This is a great example of one that we launched this year with a tourism association in Vancouver Island. So the idea is that anyone can go to a visitor center in Vancouver Island. They'll get a beautiful canvas bag that has like a lovely print, says Live the Wild Pledge, and they can take the Wild Pledge, which means they're going out to a beach, they're filling their bag with any beach materials they find. And then we have different collection depots around Vancouver Island North. After they drop off a bag of material, they then get like a card that basically gives them discounts to a bunch of local businesses. Wow. So it's supporting local businesses. It's sharing knowledge about what the areas that they're in through their visits to the visitor center. It's being active and leaving no trace and leaving the beaches better than they've come back. So this is a really exciting campaign that we've launched this year with, and just like, I think it's a really great example and model because it gives people the incentive, a place to take their material, and it gives them a little bit of education as well. And as Greg mentioned, like, you know, once you start looking for debris, you can arrive at a beach and it can be completely pristine. And then you look under a log or behind a salal bush and you'll find just microplastics. So I think it also like helps and encourages people to have a bit more of an eye for some of the stuff that they would initially, when you approach a beach, think like, oh, it's perfect, it's pristine, it's fine. And then you dig a little deeper and there's actually quite a bit out there.
Well, I have to say that's another great story and a fantastic example. I mean, I think some of the things we've been discussing today have amazing opportunities to serve as examples and as inspiration to other people. The idea of being able to identify microplastics in the water, Greg, you know, that is something that I think everybody would be interested to participate in. Brad, you know, your dedication and your hard work from your home island of Palma and your determination to continue to work to save the Med is also always has been inspirational. And I'm telling you, I'm there to help Yacht Crew participate even more. And Nicole, I mean, honestly, what you guys are doing there is incredible. And to think that you've only done that in a very few short years. And again, what I've enjoyed about this conversation is that we've gone everywhere from Dos Manos, cleaning the beaches, inspiring people and bringing smiles to their faces, all the way to taking this concept to a brand new manufacturing and end user and using that. Let's face it, we're all in business, right? So, Greg, what you were talking about, I seem to feel like your eco-consciousness is part of your marketing. Nicole, obviously, what you are doing is amazing, and that's big business. And Brad, the way you've managed to involve so many different groups in making all this happen, it's been absolutely fascinating. I feel like we could sit here and talk about this for much longer, but unfortunately, we're going to have to finish our fantastic session. So, you know, I'd say next time let's meet on Vancouver Island and bring people or Palma, and bring all of us together and sit down and have a glass of wine and talk about this further, because all three of you, thank you so much, Greg Parrish, Brad Robertson,